I'm Melinda Linderer Huff, director of the Milton Historical Society, and I'm so happy that you've decided to spend some time touring our beautiful little town. Using Milton's significant collection of historic buildings and the Broadkill River as a backdrop, our tour will introduce you to the rich history of this small community. I hope that as you listen to the stories of Milton and its residents, your imaginations will soar, and you will visualize a town with a multi-layered history and an extremely promising future. But before you start out, let's talk a bit about the building that houses the Historical Society. It was built in 1857 as a Methodist Protestant church and held services as the Grace Methodist Church until the late 1950s. The building was renovated in 1906 when the stained glass windows and bell tower were added. In 2006, the Historical Society membership and community came together to raise $600,000 for the renovation of the building. Significant rot necessitated the replacement of the foundation and floor, as well as the replacement of siding and roof. The bell tower was rebuilt, and an entirely new wing devoted to storage and exhibition space was added onto the south side of the building. Jack Hudson is a board member of the Society. His family owned and operated a hardware store in downtown Milton for many years. He gives us a first-hand account of changes to the building over time.
It was originally called Grace Methodist Church, and there were two Methodist churches in Milton. There was a Grace Methodist Church, and then there was a Goshen Methodist Church, and the Goshen Church is still here. And what happened was that back in the, middle to late 60s, the Methodist Conference determined that there was not enough room in the town for two Methodist churches, and one of them was going to close. The Grace Church was the small church, so they closed it, actually padlocked the doors, and it made a lot of the people that went there very upset. And some just shrugged it off and went to the Goshen Church and forgot about it. But a large group did not, and they actually formed their own church, which is still here today on Union Street in front of the cemetery. And after the conference padlocked the doors, it just sat there for a long time. And then there was a gentleman who rented it by the last name of Foley. And back then, of course, the Vietnam War was really hot, and he made parts for walkie-talkies for the armed services, and he did a lot of cable work. And in the church part now, that's the museum, there were long workbenches set up in there, and he had quite a number of employees, and they soldered parts and put cables together. And some of us boys worked there for a short time, not long. And then over where what's gone now, but where the social hall was, which is now where the meeting room is of the Historical Society, he sort of used that for an office. And then after he left, in 1972, I guess it was given to the Historical Society to form a Historical Society. So it's amazing that for what happened to that building after it stopped being a church, that it really survived the way it did.
When you leave the Milton Historical Society, take a short walk south on Union Street until you reach the Union Street Bridge, previously known as the Red Bridge. It's at the head of the Broadkill River, the waterway that dictated the town's location and its early economic direction. As you stand on the Union Street Bridge facing the Broadkill River, you might want to think about Milton's first settlers. Not too many years after they arrived, the Broadkill became a popular site for the shipping and shipbuilding industries. Wealthy sea captains and merchants, ship carpenters and sailors all made their homes here. Today we will walk the four main streets where they lived and worked: Union and Federal, running north and south, and Broad and Mill, running east and west. These are the same streets that, now, form the core of our town's historic district, designated on the National Register of Historic Places. Containing 198 structures, the district's boundaries are said to contain the finest surviving close concentration of residential and commercial architecture in Delaware's Sussex County. Russ McCabe, director of the Delaware State Archives and vice president of the Milton Historical Society, is going to tell us a little bit more about the Broadkill and why it was so attractive to Milton's early settlers.
Beginning in the 1680s, people followed those rivers inland and settled first along the rivers. Why? because of the same reasons the Native Americans had considered the rivers to be so important. They were the backbone of the transportation system. They gave them an outlet to trade and an outlet to food sources. So the first European settlers who came to this area proper, who settled on the Broadkill River, for instance, the first settlers were forced inland because you aren't going to settle in the marsh. You can't take an ox cart loaded with grain or shingles that you've rived out of cedar trees and pull them to a wharf across a marsh. You can't do it. So settlement very quickly in the 1680s began to push inland here on the Broadkill River because that first half of the river bank, if you will, was not sturdy, was not stable. The first European settlers to receive tracts of land, and certainly by the late 1680s there were more than one here, had settled in this greater area of where Milton is today on the Broadkill River. Milton as a community would exist 5 miles west of here or 5 miles east of here if the highest point of navigability was 5 miles east or west. That's literally why it's here. Again, geography guides where man goes and what man does with the land. If you were to come into the Broadkill River 300 years ago, 200 years ago, or a little less than 200 years ago, you couldn't have gotten any further up the river with a boat than literally right here, right where this bridge is right here. That was, so that proved to be an advantage for Milton.
Beginning at the northwest side of Union Street, we will now head west towards Mulberry Street. As we proceed on the brick pathway called Governor's Walk, and later on Mill Alley, make sure to note the historical markers for Delaware Governors Samuel Painter, David Hazard, Joseph Maul, and James Ponder, all of Milton. There is also a marker for Joseph M. Carey, a son of Milton who served as governor of Wyoming. Let's stop midway along the walk, where we'll hear more about Milton's early history. Pausing on Governor's Walk, we'll listen as Russ describes how hard it would be to exaggerate the prosperity and prestige that the shipbuilding industry brought to Milton.
Why in a 50-year period did a little town like Milton have four men who served as governor of the state of Delaware? Because of our economic importance here. As our country became, you know, a major exporter, our exports grew, there was this major demand for vessels. So by about 1820, vessel building concentrated here in Milton. Why? Just the reason we've talked about already. Furthest point of navigation, up the river, closest to the raw products, the wood that would be used to construct the vessels to the west in the center part of the peninsula. So it was literally the closest place to get that stuff here to construct the vessels. You had the younger sons who needed work. You had a demand nationally for the product. And by about 1820, a majority of the vessels being built in Milton really was this epicenter of shipbuilding. By then, most of these vessels were being built for export purposes. They weren't being built for trade to and from Milton, for instance. And they grew tremendously in size, and they continued to grow. The largest vessel constructed in Milton, or in Milton shipyards, which was built in the 1880s, was roughly, if you can imagine it, the length of a 17-story building in height. These things were, by the time this industry reached its peak, these were vessels that were being constructed for the transatlantic trade. So again, what happened here, basically, was it wasn't by accident. It was literally a result of geography, topography, and the growth of our population. Labor source, product, demand, physical location. And that's what really created the Milton that we know today. I mean, you go up and down the streets, and most of the buildings that were, most of the houses and some of the businesses that are still standing today were all constructed during that time period when Milton was literally this at the center of this tremendous economy.
We'll continue on Governor's Walk until we reach the Mulberry Street Bridge. Let's stop for a few moments when we get there. From the Mulberry Street Bridge, we have a good view of the picturesque pond that was created when the Broadkill River was dammed in 1815. We'll talk about the importance of the pond to Milton's economic life a bit later. But for now, the pond underscores the importance of water to Milton's community life. Joe Black and Martha Jane Donovan Burke remember the fun they had on the pond when they were growing up.
You went in the mill pond every day.
Yeah, we'd
did a lot of swimming down at the mill pond. No bathing suits. Well, we had a spot down in back of where, you know, where the funeral home is. It's directly in back of it where we did most of our bathing.
Yeah.
We had stumps that we named out in the pond, like the one we would go out to most, we call it New York. We could swim out there and back. We were considered pretty good swimmers.
The current weir that's there now was a lot different. It was an old set of wooden gates. That's where all the guys would, not all, but a lot of people would swim there. And up here in the upper pond, going up that way, was where all the boys would go if they cut school and swim. And it was called, pardon my choice of French words, Bare Ass Beach. And it had a rope and a knot and a tire out there, and you swung out over the trees and dropped down to the lake. A lot of people learned to swim over there on that mill dam, and they would just jump off. It wasn't like it is now. At one point in time, it was utilized for water skiing, and we almost had to leave on weekends because it would just start early in the morning and go till Sunday night dark. That's when Mr. Wagaman owned the pond, and he would take care of the level of the water in it himself, and he basically took care of the lake in terms of lowering and raising the gates and lowering them and all that kind of thing. And then when he sold it, Joe Hudson bought it. And Joe had it for a long time. And then finally the state took it over. And that's when it became a recreational facility for fishing. And they put a 5-mile-an-hour speed limit on it. And they stock it. And it has a fish ladder over there now. So it's a different purpose. And they do take better care of it than one individual could do.
As we get on our way again, we'll walk south along Mill Alley through Milton's newest park, stopping for a moment midway to talk about the debate over the town's name. A statue of the poet John Milton was dedicated here in December 2008. Now that you're in Mill Park, feel free to rest on one of the benches and view the sculpture of the poet John Milton. Many think the town bears his name, but others aren't so sure. Actually, the town has had many names over the course of its history. First, Osborne's and Conwell's Landings, then Greencorn, Federal Town, and Head of the Bronze Kiln. In 1807, the villagers asked the Delaware General Assembly to name the village Milton. An outstanding debate is over whether the town was named after the poet or called Milltown in honor of Milton's many mills. The first mill was established upriver from here in about 1710. Mill Alley itself serves as a reminder of two other mills. The pathway is located near the site of a water-powered flour and grist mill owned and run by the Wagaman family until the 1960s. It is also a reminder of a steam-driven sawmill that was located across the street. When we finish our walk along Mill Alley, we'll be on Federal Street. This will give us our first in-depth look at the Milton Historic District. Standing at the corner of Federal and Coulter, we're reminded that Milton's architectural history is the only real remnant of the town's heyday as a port and industrial center. If you look east toward the Federal Street Commercial District, you'll see many of the town's finest mid to late 19th century homes. We'll take a closer look at these later in our walk. Experts think that the preservation of Milton's housing stock was determined by economic decline. Russ McCabe tells us more about the loss of the booming shipbuilding industry.
But what happened by the 1880s, a couple things happened. There's this kind of stereotypical, and I hesitate to use that expression, but I can remember more than one person telling me when I was younger, well, you know, the shipbuilding industry in Milton died because of steam. Not so. If you were to go to any of the ports, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, in the 1920s, you would be shocked to find the number of sailing vessels that were still being used then. Why? Because it was far less expensive to own and operate a sailing vessel as late as the 1920s. I mean, steam had been around for darn near 100 years, but it wasn't steam and metal vessels that ended this industry here so rapidly. And it did. And there was a description in the 1880 census about the shipbuilding industry here. And it's just overflowing with praise about, you know, what a wonderful thing it is economically, how many people are employed, 3-4 shipyards, ships on the stocks, and things were just booming. By 1890, the business had virtually ceased. But it had very little to do with that shift to steam power. What happened was, again, a result of geography and available resources. Two couple things, basically. One, we finally ran out of shipbuilding material. All that great hardwood forest was gone. In its place grew those wonderful holly and pine-covered forests that we think of today, because it grows up faster. Then the second thing happened. Remember we talked about the fact earlier that as people settled here, the first places they settled were closest to the water. And the first thing that they did was they cleared out the trees. And that continued back away from the rivers and streams. That was the settlement pattern. Because then you could grow a crop there and you could sell the wood. What happened when runoff.
From here, turn right and walk back to Mulberry. We'll cross the street and stop for a moment at Goshen Church. Although the physical location of Goshen Church has moved several times, the church itself has a long history in Milton. It was established here in 1801. Aside from its role as a place of worship, the church is a reminder of winter's past. Several Miltonians remember the wintertime activities that took place near the church.
In the wintertime, where the Goshen Church is, the hill, Mulberry Street, they didn't use salt the minute the first snowflake came down. They closed that hill off as far as Magnolia Street, and at nighttime, when it's sledding there, that was a lot of entertainment. And the pond would freeze over. They'd have fire out on the pond, and some would skate. And it we'd hurry and get the lessons done, so we could go up on the hill and go. And they didn't, they closed it off until the snow was gone so that kids could do that. Like I say, today children don't know with the sledding. They really don't know how much fun. And it didn't cost anything. If you didn't have a sled, somebody was gone down the hill, you jumped on, belly flopped them. And it was good. Yeah.
In my lifetime growing up, there were a lot of gentlemen that were phenomenal skaters, which leads me to believe that it froze quite a bit when they were younger. Because they used to come out and skate. One man came up to me one day and said, could I please skate across the lake with you? And it was like having some professional ice skater drag me across the ice. When it would freeze, people would come. We would build fires inside of tires right along the edge. And that the fire company would come over and supervise these things and also shine lights out on the pond because we skated at night as well as in daytime. And sometimes it would snow on top of it. You'd have to get out and brush the snow off. You didn't have to, but it was really rough if you didn't. So we would skate out there, and just everybody would come, and people would just come and stand.
On Federal Street, just past Goshen Methodist Church, you'll run into Marshall Street. Feel free to meander down. As you stroll down Marshall Street, you'll see a summer kitchen, an old barn, a shed, the law office of Governor David Hazard, built in about 1810, a typical 19th-century farmhouse with hand-hewn cypress shingle walls, and a cottage. A button shop was located on the lane between the 1930s and the 1950s. We'll talk a lot more about the button-cutting industry later in the tour. In this area also, past the lane and closer to the mill pond, was the ice house operated by Handy Prettyman. Handy was a free man of color and one of Milton's most prominent and respected entrepreneurs in the early 20th century. Joe Black and Martha Jane Donovan Burke recall the central role that the ice house played in the Milton community.
From pictures that I've seen, Handy Prettyman had a huge ice house over in this area. And I saw a picture of this pond being froze deep enough that they would take the horses and the wagons out on the pond, cut the ice out, fill the wagon up, and go back up with it. It used to freeze a lot more than it does now.
It used to cut ice out of the mill pond and store it in the ice house that he had built close to the mill pond. He would go out there with probably another man or two and use a cross-cut saw, had the handles on both ends, you know, and they saw these chunks of ice, then put it in the ice house, and I think sawdust on top of it to preserve it, you know, so he could sell it in the summertime to the ladies around town who didn't have refrigerators at that time. They were just ice boxes.
Yeah.
I know my mother used to have an ice box. And
that's what Mom had.
When we were kids, you know, he'd pick off a little bit of ice and, you know, to chew on. He was a nice guy. Handy Prettyman, called.
So Prettyman's ice house is gone now?
Oh, yeah.
Are there no
it
remnants
burned,
of it?
I think a bunch of kids, I'm not sure, but probably some armory boys or something one night went in there and set it afire. I think, I mean, that's just hearsay. But it did burn down. And he never rebuilt that I know of.
As we proceed further south on Federal Street, let's stop briefly at number 416. This is the Governor James Ponder Mansion, now the Short Funeral Home. You're now at number 416 Federal Street, right in front of the home of Governor James Ponder, the 44th governor of the state of Delaware. He served as governor from 1871 until 1875. Behind the house is the old swimming hole that we talked about earlier. Across Federal Street from the mansion is one of the town's few brick Queen Anne-style houses. The bricks were produced by Laughlin's, a local brickyard. Laughlin's brick is distinctive for its bright orange color and can be found in several other early 20th century properties around town. After you take a look, continue up Federal Street until you reach Abraxas Studio of Art at number 515.